All right. Drafts might be wrapping up. The big board, the little board's closing. The NFL draft might be just over a week away. But that seems like the perfect time to get ADP chasing rolling again on the Ship Chasing channel. Paternity Pat is still out, but nevertheless, we got Sam Davis, Gretch, and myself here to do a final pre-NFL draft version of ADP chasing, talking through all of the risers, fallers, certainly some interesting player movements to discuss. ADP chasing is back. Let's do it.
Pat Fryer-Helmoff.
This is why I'm hot. Anita Hanjob.
Fix your sight.
Jamar Alpha Play Chase.
Are you kidding me? Kadarius Toney?
You can't handle the heat.
It looks like we're finally at this point. You're right.
Excited to be back on the ADP chasing, on Ship Chasing. Everybody, we got, you know, we got a lot of feedback the past couple shows with just me, Pat, and Davis that we didn't have enough voices in the room. So I'm excited to have both Gretch and Pete joining us today. Fellas, how are we doing?
Doing good. So the good. Only way to fill Pat's shoes is with four feet, two sets of feet. So Gretch and I are going to do our best today.
Why is the Garrett Wilson clip not in the Ship Chasing intro? Why is the Garrett Wilson Lynn Swan clip not a part of the intro? I mean, I feel like that's a legendary Ship Chasing moment, to be honest.
I think it happened after the intro was already made.
Yeah, it did. And I've noticed this. I refresh my Best Ball Breakfast intros once a year because the references change. But people also start to treat these as comfort food, and then they'll get upset. So you do kind of have to add to it as opposed to remove something.
Correct.
But yes, we'll talk with the team and see if that needs to get added.
That was a classic moment for sure. We got that. This year's Garrett Wilson moment could happen, you know, next week. That's coming up, the draft show.
Yeah, I think we're gonna get a Jaden Daniels is Fran Tarkenton and Warren Moon comp.
And we could seriously get a Kadarius Toney moment with all of these random wide receivers that could go at the end of round one too.
Jacob Ladd McConkey.
All right, Sam. This is your guys' show. You take the steering wheel. What's the agenda for today?
Yeah, so we're going to go over risers and fallers over the past 2 weeks. So Pete, if you wouldn't mind adding the charts up. Yeah. So here, this has been sort of a bit of a dead period, I'd say, in ADP movement, but still some after effects, I guess, of free agency and trades showing up here. So there's a bunch of guys on here, Bills and Texans guys that we've talked a lot through. I wanted to spend a bit more time on some of the names we didn't talk as much about. So starting today, talking about Derrick Henry, he's up 6 spots over the past 2 weeks, you know, more like 30 spots over the last month where he was pre-free agency. He shows up here as the second biggest riser. Curious, I guess, starting with you, Gretch, how have you been approaching Henry? I know you drove across the border to do some slow drafts.
Yeah.
How are you thinking about his new price in best ball right now?
I haven't taken him yet. I think it's less about him specifically and more about how I've wanted to approach structurally. And so I haven't been taking a lot of running backs in that range. But certainly at his age, it's a high opportunity cost already. And then you get into the question of the area that he's going in. There's a lot of receivers that I want to be taking. And you can even start to talk about the tight ends. And so it's one I just haven't actually allowed myself to think too hard about. I do think after talking with Sean on Bananas yesterday, I don't know if the pod is out yet that we discussed it. I do think the Ravens are a pretty decent candidate to be adding in the draft. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, this big rise.
I think they're a lock to take.
Yeah, they're more or less a lock. And it's not a great running back class, but once they add, I'm curious if this rise is going to be undone a little bit. And then Keaton Mitchell, I was researching him a little bit just for some late round stuff and found that just refreshing myself on his injury and stuff, that it was a single ligament tear when he tore his ACL. And also that John Harbaugh had some quotes right away that it was a clean tear when they went in, they did the surgery. Yep. They felt really good about it. That I mean, he's still very young. It seems like the lowest impact of an ACL tear that you could have, basically. So if they add a rookie and they have Keaton Mitchell and Derrick Henry, you know, 30 plus years old, and Greg Roman's not there anymore. I mean, there's all the effects of Lamar Jackson and everything, but on rushing efficiency and all that. But I do think there's some concern about the overall size of his workload and how hard they're going to really push him. This price for me gets tricky with the opportunity cost at the other positions.
I'm curious why you guys think they're likely to add a back. I mean, my thought was with Keaton Mitchell, assuming that ACL tear is clean and he can be back, he's still on the roster. Justice Hill is still on the roster. He got decent playing time last year. I don't know. To me, it seems less likely they would go running back with all the needs they have, but I don't know. I guess it's always
a team. It's a team that cannot function without multiple available running backs. Justice Hill is 27. He's year second contract running back. They've never really wanted to play Justice Hill. The only reason he was playing last year was like solely through attrition. And you can just tell it's just a team that values running backs. Like they always spend a pick on a running back. Mitchell, I took him a lot early in the big board when I like didn't really know any of the rookie running backs and was just kind of vibing. But I would expect him to be either not available to start the year or not a big part of it. And also, I mean, I think they have to be realistic about the fact that Derrick Henry is 30 and there is just a chance that he doesn't make it through the entirety of the season is my thing.
Yeah.
So the only thing I would just add to that is they have 9 picks and they have their first, second, and third rounders. Their extra picks are on day 3. They have 6 day 3 picks, and most of this class is expected to be kind of day 3 picks. I'd be surprised if they didn't use one of those day 3 picks on the back.
One thing from the titular ADP chasing reference that's interesting here is like if you're drafting off of any ranks, like ETR, Rotoviz, and LegUp are all behind this ADP. So like you will not get him to what Gretch was saying, like the structural stuff. There are some really nice wide receiver picks there, but I had this moment yesterday where I did my usual thing of clicking a wide receiver there. And I immediately was kind of upset because Henry had slipped a few picks past ADP. And I said to myself, we all know where this is headed. Derrick Henry is headed for the early third round, late second round during BBM drafting season when everyone pours in. And I'm probably not going to like his ADP as much there as I am right now. And so I kind of had the thought, like, I do maybe want to pack some of my final bags of Henry at this price because I do think he's only going to get more expensive. So that's my only thing about that. If like, if you don't like the price now, if you don't want to have 0%, you might want to grab a few shares.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Pat made that point, I think, on our last show where I was like, I think he settles like 3-4 turn. He's already jumped past that. And I think you're right that he's probably continuing to jump up. I did want to have a little bit of discussion on Derrick Henry's decline. So I looked into his performance the past 5 years. So what this chart shows, which is interesting, this is percentage of weeks getting a spike week over 25 plus points. And you can see that from 2019 to 2021, Derrick Henry was basically the best running back in the league at doing this, really only getting beaten out by maybe Christian McCaffrey. Then in 2022, saw a decline. And then last year, he had almost no spike weeks above 25 plus points. But as always, when you do these sort of arbitrary threshold things, it's worth setting a lower threshold and seeing what happens. If you lower that to 20 plus points, he really hasn't shown a big decline in his fantasy scoring. So, you know, the past 2 years, last year, he was still first in the NFL amongst running backs and delivering 20 plus point spike weeks. Last year, he was sixth. So he's still, you know, even in his age 30 season, he hasn't shown massive signs of decline. That's also somewhat backed up by some underlying stats and efficiency here. So his breakaway rate, by how PFF measures it, that has not really declined over the past 5 years. It shows up in his, you know, top speed when carrying the ball. That hasn't really declined either. His rush yards over expected per attempt has declined from that 2019-2020. But again, PFF rush grade hasn't really declined. So I don't know. I think with Henry, like, the age concerns are certainly there. I do think, like, I'm willing to attribute more of his statistical decline last season more to the Titans offense than him, like, really showing some massive decline as a player. So yeah, for me, it comes down to like the age cliff. It's coming up at some point. I don't think he's hit it yet, but he obviously could hit it in a year. So that's what you really have to price it.
That's the thing with all these guys is they don't hit it till they do. Right. And then, yeah, and then yeah. once a 240 pound running back hits the age cliff, there's no climbing back up the cliff. There's no scaffolding equipment that is going to get him back up on top of the mountain.
I guess I would disagree with Pete a little bit, and the chat seems to really agree with it as well. I would be surprised if he continues to rise from here. I feel like the ADP trends have valued age over the last couple of years, that there's a lot of guys that have started a small slide the year that they start to, like, he turned 30 in January. You're showing some of these numbers with the rush yards over expected that have dropped off. If you just look at like his yards per carry, which is a little more surface level, it does show a pretty significant drop over the, not just the last year, but the last like 3 years, where, you know, he used to be like a 5 yards per carry guy, 2018, 2019, 2020. He's been not even hit 4.5 yards per carry the last 3 years. Now, some of that's offensive line and all that stuff, but it has impacted his overall production. He hasn't led the league in rushing yards in a long time, but he has led in rushing attempts, but he's been less efficient. Doesn't catch a lot of passes. Right. So it's all like a touchdowns argument. And I think there's going to be people that are going to say, okay, well, is Baltimore really going to give him the league lead in rushing attempts like he had the last 2 years in Tennessee? I don't know. I mean, I think a 30-year-old back going in round two.
Probably not, but he'll make up with that with touchdowns, right? If he just ends up getting 16 Gus Edwards ass touchdowns.
That, and to me, that's what it is. Like, I think people who want to select him or who will inevitably select him there, they don't care about the efficiency stuff. They're saying Gus Edwards scored 13 touchdowns in this offense as a dusty 29-year-old running back. Derrick Henry's better than that. Like, the touchdown expectation, I think that's what you're paying for. And yeah, we could talk about how that might be a big mistake to pay that kind of prices for a volatile, you know, return on scoring. But I think that's going to be the psychology of late second, early third Henry drafters.
I just am not really that interested. I mean, I would be pretty interested if he was cheaper, but I just, like, can I take Derek? I literally, as we were doing this exercise, I was like, when's the last time I even noticed Derek Henry's name doing it?
What I don't even really think about it, but I think to Sam's point, and that's a great point, Pete. I do think that's a sharp take. This chart, exactly, this is a touchdown chart. Like, he isn't adding the yardage anymore to get to the 25 point spike. He never really has much receiving, right? He's not adding enough yardage with the TDs, but he's still getting those 20 point games with, you know, a multiple TD game with whatever it is, 70 rushing yards, or if he gets to 120 and one TD or something and a little bit of receiving. But he used to have 200-yard rushing games where he could get to 25-point, you know, weeks without even stacking up too many touchdowns. I mean, this to me is like, yeah, I mean, so it's a good point by Pete that, I mean, some 20-point games off touchdowns alone.
I think the thing I'm wondering, Gretch, is just like, is the last 2 years really Derrick Henry being worse as a player, or is it just that Titans offense? I mean, last year when they switched from Tannehill to Levis, like, the offense really was not firing on all cylinders. I guess I question, like, has he really lost that yardage ability if Baltimore gives him the touches? I mean, he should be extremely efficient, just like we saw Gus Edwards be for, you know, 5 straight years. I don't think we think Gus Edwards is that talented of a running back, but he could be extremely efficient in that offense. Yeah, it takes a bit of a leap to be like, okay, Henry's not going to hit the age cliff and they're going to give him like the full workload. But I guess I do see the upside if that happens.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, for me, I don't think he's going to be like a target player for me or someone I'll be overweight on. But in sort of like anchor running back builds where I go wide receiver, get Henry as my anchor running back, like, I can see ways in that working out pretty well.
I don't think he's hit the cliff, but I think Davis is right that, like, that can come at any time.
Yeah.
But Derrick Henry's a unique talent. I mean, the guys that do hold on for longer than we expect are usually guys that are outliers, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
Latavius Murray, you know, just kind of like really unique sort of guys who just, I mean,
Latavius Murray didn't lead the league in rushing into his age 30 seasons.
No, he just sent everyone's favorite James Cook to the bench on goal line possessions as the literal oldest running back in the NFL. Here's the thing. any sort of Derrick Henry analysis is so reductive because it literally doesn't matter. It just comes down to, does Derrick Henry score a bunch of touchdowns or does he not? And no one, he's 30 years old. We're not changing our minds about Derrick Henry. Guess what? I'm not going to wake up one day. I mean, I took Derrick Henry last year.
Yeah, you were a Derrick Henry bull last year. What do you mean wake up and change your mind? You woke up 2 days ago and changed your mind.
He played the Houston Texans twice in the playoffs. Forget. And then it turns out that the Texans were actually a good run defense. But like Henry is going to get between 245 and 300 carries, depending on how sensitive they are to like his age. Just keep Mitchell, like kind of have a Tajay Spears style role in this offense. And if he scores 17 touchdowns, the Faders will probably be, the other thing for underdog stuff is, what is the week 17 game for Baltimore going to be? Is it an attractive one? Is it a shitty one? Like,
are they playing in a dome? What's the weather like?
Your two biggest week 17 takes last year were don't play Browns Jets because it's an El Nino monsoon, and also draft Derrick Henry because of the Texas
just don't
defense.
Play. It was no outdoor games. I wanted as much Colts Raiders as my little stomach could handle. But if it's Ravens Steelers outdoors. What does that do? Like, seriously, what is that? Does that, are UD drafters logged in enough to be like off of him as a result of that? I'm curious.
I'm old enough to be on when it was D Hember. It was he got better in cold weather and defense.
He's better when it's right. Better when it's cold.
Yeah. You'd be on him. You'd be like, the Ravens are going to have to run the ball. Lamar Jackson can't throw in the wind is what they'll tell themselves.
Okay. All right.
I just looked this up. Davis, Adrian Peterson's the comp. Age 30 season, led the NFL in rushing attempts, yards, and TDs. That's the type of player that can still be that good at age 30. And I mean, you could argue
maybe I'm buying back in. Maybe I just bought back in.
I'm not gonna wake up, you mean, in 25 seconds. I'm not gonna change my mind.
I just like the deal for me is that there are all the wide receivers who go around him. I can squint and be like, that's the guy you need. Like Jalen Waddle goes after him, and I'm like such a Waddle apologist that I'm like, I gotta just do it.
Yeah,
that's a thing. Henry will be structurally like you receivers dry up in like round 7 this year. Like you want, and you're like, I didn't want to take a running back there.
You want to be the chucklehead taking Christian Watson in the 7th round because you really needed another wide receiver. Like, no, you don't.
I'd rather take some shares of Bijan in round 1 and then, you know, take a receiver in round 3 but not load up on too much early running back and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that's the question. And yeah, it'll be an interesting one with Henry to see where his price moves. Let's move on to CJ Stroud. We talked a lot about the Texans the past couple of weeks. We didn't actually talk much about their quarterback and where his price should go. He's up nearly 10 spots to 52 overall. I think he's now going as like the QB 4 or 5 off the board, pretty close to
dumbassery.
Mahomes.
Well, yeah, it's also, it's not just dumbassery. It's also Siegel's fault, who's been saying he should go ahead of Mahomes and Lamar and like not even in that tier. And he's saying that Stroud's like QB2 and going to throw for 5,050. So I kind of blame him.
Sean, I'm sorry. I cannot onboard this.
But I mean, what you need with Stroud, right, is you need one of those like retro Tom Brady 2007,
Manning
2014, Aaron Rodgers 2011. Brady. Yeah, you need one of these insane pocket passer seasons that I guess we saw it a bit with Brady on the Bucs, but they're more so things that have happened like a decade ago with the prime Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Breeze seasons. Like you call it a throwback season like that, yeah.
But that's what Mahomes did in his second season, and I think that's sort of the template as well. The one thing I'll say is, like, you look at, like, Mahomes now, he's not going to have a 5,050 season because the Chiefs know they have to play 4 playoff games every year. Like, they are intentionally not pushing in the regular season at this phase of their evolution. The Texans are at this point where they're like, we're going to go get Stephon Diggs right now. We're going to go do all this stuff, and see, like, his pass attempts are going to rise in year 2. They're going to see the limitations. The Bills did this in like year 2, year 3 of Josh Allen, right? Like, this is the point in like the team's evolution with a young quarterback who's a clear hit where they do push, right? And I mean, if it's going to happen for CJ Stroud in his career, I would bet that it would happen in the first like 3 to 5 seasons, as opposed to, you know, 6 or 8 years down the road, at least in the modern NFL. For Manning and Brady and those guys, it happened later in their career. But some of that was because of passing trends not changing until later in those guys' career. But I think, like, if you're going to bet on it, year two CJ Stroud's a pretty good time to bet on that type of a season.
I don't find this crazy. Like, I don't find this ADP crazy in, like, when you frame it to where, like, we had the course correction, right, where, like, all those elite quarterbacks used to go way too high. Then it pushed back. Then the market understood. You push up the guys with the rushing ceiling, so we get the Josh Allens, the Jalen Hurts is going. And then we saw the high upside pocket passer settle in that round five range. Like, everyone did the Joe Burrow premium double with Chase and Higgins, and they take him in the fifth round. Like, we always take shots on that guy. We did it with Herbert a couple years ago before things kind of went south there, of like, who is this guy that has the weapons and the talent to have that prolific season? Like, so to me, Stroud being in this range, like, historically over the past couple of years, that doesn't strike me as weird. He's like the best wide receiver crew we've ever seen. So I don't know. It seems like a fair price to me relative to how the market has traditionally priced these passers.
Yeah. That's what I'm having a hard time figuring out. Like, I wanted to have some hot take that's like, CJ Stroud has the best three wide receiver set since, I don't know, like, a historically good three wide receiver set. But at the same time, I'm like, Tank Dell was like a late round three prospect that nobody thought anything of. Nico Collins was like a nobody until last year. Like, are these three wide receivers really amazing? Or is that just like Stroud being amazing? So
that's why you would take Stroud.
Yeah, that's why you would take Stroud. Noah Brown had a career high season last year.
Yeah, I just don't want to like double count that. You know what I mean? Be like, Stroud's awesome and his receivers are amazing. It's like you get into a little risk of like double counting there, right?
I think where I would get queasy is if people were taking him ahead of Lamar and Josh Allen and Hurts and those guys that we know just have that nuclear Konami code ceiling, whereas they're still respecting that gap of saying like Stroud isn't going to run a ton. He's going to have to get it done with his arm. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm okay with it if I have – I mean, in terms of the price, if I have one of these wide receivers, I'm going to be so excited about the Texan stack. It's going to be hard for me to avoid Stroud in this range, I think.
The note, Sam, that you just made, Nico Collins had a 3.1 yards per out run last year, hadn't hit 1.7 in either of his first two seasons, so almost doubled his career high. Yeah. Noah Brown had never hit 1.25 yards per out run because he's Noah Brown, and he had a 1.94. On almost 300 routes, he had like a 2.0 yards per – I mean, he's right below 2.0.
He had like back-to-back 150-yard games, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so – I think it's pretty fair to say it was Stroud, and then you add Diggs to the mix, and you're like, I mean, he's already elevating these other dudes. He's so vertical with his passing. He pushes downfield, and I mean, at least last year, defenses couldn't really stop it as a rookie right out of the gate, you know, and they've gotten better. They've been able to add this offseason in a lot of ways. One of my concerns is the Texans are too good because they added Danielle Hunter. They added a couple other front seven guys, a D tackle, a linebacker. They already had the defensive rookie of the year on the other end. So now they have two really good edge rushers, really good front seven. That I think the Texans are like a legit contender in the AFC. And if they're like too good in the AFC South, maybe he doesn't have to throw a lot in second halves of games and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know.
We did this with Burrow. We did this with Herbert. CJ Stroud is a really good quarterback. He's got good wide receivers.
The Burrow thing worked.
The guys who – no, not for fantasy it didn't. Not QB6, Joe Burrow did not work for fantasy.
Yeah, where he was going like 2 years ago. Is that what you're referring to? I think he was in like
– I think I'm referring to his second season when he
– No, that certainly worked.
4,634.
Yes, that worked. But the last
his price the following season, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was more like an eighth-round pick in his second season. Is that right?
Yes. Now,
yeah, maybe even later. That was like before we knew Joe Burrow was like good almost, right? I don't know.
There's just a clear, like, Dak Prescott goes 30 picks later around a bunch of shit guys you don't really want to take. And what if I made you set the line right now, fantasy points, CJ Stroud versus Dak Prescott, you'd be like, oh, I'll totally take Stroud. And I'd be like, okay, I'll give you plus 120. Or I get plus 120 on Dak. And you'd be like, I don't really want to do that.
One other ADP wrinkle to all of this that is going to be unique to the Stroud stuff, you know, relative to the Burrow premium doubles, is you would often see sometimes a Burrow slide if like whoever had one of Jamar or T was just like, I'll push it. And then the other, say one took, you know, Josh Allen or something. And then it's all of a sudden like, oh, no one wants unstacked Burrow. That's going to happen far, far less likely with Stroud having three different stacking candidates. And the other chalk thing that I already see in big board drafts, it's like every other draft, someone takes Higgins and Collins at the 2-3 turn and then Burrow at the 4-5 turn. Like, it's so comfy, it's so cozy. And then even if you let Burrow go past the 4-5 turn, the Tank Dell drafter in the fifth saying, hi there, yeah, I'm scooping that up. So I don't see his ADP really ever falling out of the fifth round.
No, yeah.
Burrow 2022 was also super good, by the way. I think both 2021 and 2022, he was a pretty big hit at ADP. Probably had plus win. The only difference in 2022 is all of Allen, Hurts, and Mahomes went off that year. But I mean, yes,
that's the thing. That's the thing is, you cannot, if CJ Stroud, okay, if Hurts, Allen, Lamar, and Mahomes all come close to ceiling seasons. I mean, Hurts and Allen don't even have to get their ceiling seasons. They just walk into 22 fantasy points per game. But if Mahomes and Lamar both regress towards having closer to their career averages, like remember Lamar just like stopped scoring touchdowns last year. They were just like, you know what, Lamar, you don't need to score any touchdowns for like a 4-week stretch. And I mean, enough has been said about Mahomes' last season. Like I think what I've been thinking about with ADP is what I'm going to do right when Best Ball Mania 5 opens and like where I think the ADP is most markedly like to be wrong. And this is a spot where I see where, so we add round one wide receiver X, Worthy, Mitchell, whoever to the Chiefs. Maybe they take a day three guy, whatever. I just, my anticipation is that the Chiefs offense is, they're not going to do the 2023 thing again. I think they realize they flew too close to the sun throwing Pat out there with a bunch of guys who could not play. And, you know, they let Snead go. I don't think the defense is going to be near as good this upcoming season. I am anticipating a huge regression to the career mean for Mahomes, where he's like, they scored 21 points a game last year. They scored a full touchdown less than they did in their four Super Bowl season. I that is not going to happen again.
The last thing I'll say on Stroud, and then move on, is I think what's really critical here is whether the Texans remain insistent on being a balanced offense like they were last year. They were very close to league average in terms of pass attempts per game, or if they say, hey, we got Stephon Diggs, we're going to let CJ Stroud sling it 38, 40, 41 times per game. That's what you really need to have these elite pocket passer ceilings. You need to get that 38 plus attempts per game. Last year, the Texans weren't.
Well, Sam, quite there. What you really need is you need the organizational buy-in that they want him to win MVP, which we have seen happen with Burrow and we've seen happen with Allen, where they're like, we want you to generate enough statistics to win MVP or to win or to be all pro or whatever. And I don't know enough about any of the Texans people to know if that's something they're interested in doing.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I think you have to assume in year two they're going to pass more when they were that successful.
I agree.
I think that's the default. More. It should go up.
I would
up.
Think too, but they also paid Joe Mixon like a $15 million guaranteed for some reason. So it's like, what the hell is going on in Houston? let's talk Dalton Kincaid. The Liam Memorial ADP riser. He's up 8 spots. I know. I think, Pete, I've heard you talk about elite tight end being a big part of your strategy so far this year. Does Kincaid fall into that group of guys that you're targeting?
He does. I do think Liam just like legitimately ruined Dalton Kincaid for me, because I just find myself clicking every other elite tight end other than Dalton Kincaid. He's probably the guy of all of those, Pitts, Kittle, McBride, Andrews, Kelsey, that I have the least of. But yes, in general, I'm very much in on all of these prices. And I think I'm just kind of burned in that I wasn't drafting him a ton before this trade with Diggs, and now he's rocketed up in price. And I'm just like, I'll sit the Kincaid thing out for now.
What's the point? What are you hoping for with Dalton Kincaid? I guess that he scores touchdowns somehow.
I guess you're,
but what do you mean that he's their number one? He's Josh Allen's number one receiver.
I don't think he will be.
Who do you think's catching passes from Josh Allen? Curtis Samuel? Like what are we doing?
I mean, I expect Curtis Samuel to have more receiving yards than Dalton Kincaid in 2024. Yeah.
Isn't the Dalton Kincaid thesis more yards and catches than it is touchdowns? Isn't that kind of how they used him last year?
I mean, David said, what's the point? The point is they don't have a number one receiver. Like, they don't have anyone. Like, Khalil Shakir's going to be the guy. Who's going to be the dude? They just drafted him in the first round last year.
Round one wide receiver is going to – I mean, I guess as long as it's not Keon Coleman. If it's Keon Coleman, that might – That might return me around to being bullish on Kincaid, because I don't think Coleman can play in the NFL. But my deal with Kincaid, and this is going around in the Brock Bowers discourse right now, is like, I thought Kincaid was a bad first round pick. I thought he was not the archetype of a guy you should take in the first round anyways, because he is, I mean, he's like less athletic than like an Evan Ingram. You know, he didn't do all the testing, and the testing he did do was not good. He also he was a 23 year old his final season at Utah, the season that got him drafted. He's going to turn 25 in this season. So it's not like it's like Kyle Pitts is like still 19 years old. Like, I just kind of think Kincaid is like
super 19 years old.
And then Jason Tatum. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an NBA joke that flew over Gretch's head. Dalton Kincaid is like peak Jason Witten. That's like what he is for the Bills, and I'm just super not interested.
Okay,
in that.
But if you talk about the Bills, we were just talking about whether the Texans would really push pass volume. This has been a high pass rate over expected team every year the last however long, four seasons. I'm looking at Josh Allen's attempts right now. He's thrown at least 567 passes each of the last 4 years. That's a year in 2022 where he missed a game, or I guess they actually had that game canceled that year. But in terms of pass attempts per game, I'm quite confident it's up near the league lead in every season so far. They lost from last – I'm not a vacated targets guy. This will be the only time all offseason I'll note this. But other than just Stephon Diggs, 160 targets, Gabe Davis had 81 targets last year too. They don't have anybody to catch the ball on a really high-volume passing offense. You cannot like
Curtis
the player.
Samuel is going to get the ball. Curtis Samuel is going to get
no. I think he's a good pick too. I think it's crazy that the Bills only have one dude in the top 100 ADP, and then Samuel.
Yeah,
I mean, Shakir's coming up as well. Whoever the first round rookie, my point is also in a great spot. But Kincaid can succeed alongside them. They have so many available pass attempts that have to go somewhere, right?
I think kind of what I'm saying is I don't even know if he's capable of being a guy who can handle that level of volume on an offense that wins games. I don't know if building an offense around 7.9 ADOT Dalton Kincaid throws leads them to where they want to go. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But like so if my prior is I didn't like him really as a prospect, thought he was a bad first round pick. He got a lot of empty receptions. I mean, Sam, you want to talk about a receptions merchant? Kincaid was a real receptions merchant as a rookie. And, you know, the other weird thing is, you know, they don't have any wide receivers. They signed Dawson Knox to this contract extension. They're going to still be playing a ton of 12 personnel, I think, this upcoming year, which for touchdown stuff is not that good for him.
So on the receptions merchant thing, I was sort of looking into historically good rookie tight end seasons. And over the last decade, there's been 11 tight ends to clear 500 yards in a season. And I included Kelsey in this. It was technically his second season, but he was redshirted his first season. He was on IR the whole year. So the hits in this group of 11 are Kelsey, Andrews, and Kittle. Obviously smashes, elite tight ends. Then there's six guys that are
guys have in common, Sam?
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, exactly. I'll get to that. There's six guys that are sort of too early to tell. Maybe we can argue on this, but I threw LaPorta and Kincaid in this bucket since they're rookies. Then Pitts, Ingram, just kind of a middling veteran. Then we have Freiermuth and Noah Fant, who are probably less likely to work out at this point. And then there's two kind of complete busts, Tim Wright from Tampa and Chris Herndon from the Jets. And out of these 11, Kincaid ranks consistently towards the back end in terms of sort of any type of efficiency metric.
What is this group that includes Chris Herndon and Tim Wright and also Travis Kelce? Like what
just all rookie tight ends to clear 500 yards their rookie season.
Okay.
People forget Chris Herndon. People forget.
Yeah, it's a really small sample that is really wide skill set that I don't know if it's going to be really predictive of anything.
No, I'm not saying that it's predictive of anything. I'm just saying that in this group, Kincaid is 10th out of 11 in yards per reception, 7th in yards per route run, 9th in ADOT, 8th in yak per reception. So of these guys, most of them, my point is most of them got there on sort of elite per route efficiency and earning the ball, you know, farther down the field. Kincaid basically just got there on compiling a ton of receptions. So I am kind of skeptical, like what is the ceiling of that? Can he just like do what he did last year, but at an even higher level, just rack up even more 6, 7, 8 ADOT catches? Or does that game sort of have a ceiling, which is where I kind of fall somewhat in line with Davis's concerns, is like, is building the entire ship out of Dalton Kincaid, is that a way to build a functional offense? Or is he more so capped at just sort of like, yeah, you know, Jason Witten, Dalton Schultz level player?
I don't think you build the whole ship out of him, but there's some other work that I've seen. I can't remember who it is, but somebody in the fantasy community that does tight end stuff. I know they've shown some. One of the big things about tight end hits is when they're one of the top two like target earners on their offense, and something that I heard this originally like 3 years
that
ago.
That does
like
keep it
in the back of my mind. Like, so if it's like Dalton Schultz has 3 really good receivers on his team, there's no path for him to be a top two target earner in his offense. Dalton Kincaid feels like a lock at this point. I mean, even with a first round rookie. So it's something that's another group that historically has been really positive. If you can just get targets from this position at tight end, it's good. There's only like 4 guys that get like 100 targets a year at tight end. He's going to get 100 targets.
Just to frame it on the ADP conversation again, and I agree with Gretch too, that like the Dalton Kincaid bull thesis, I really don't think should have even changed that much after the Diggs thing. Like, there was already a ton of targets there. Right. So my argument is this ADP jump is the classic case of underdog market double counting something, where it's like guy move, therefore a change has to be happening. And so I would argue that this is like the Pico top for his ADP, and that when we know they're going to draft a wide receiver, and it's probably going to be a name that people relatively like, you know, if it's a Brian Thomas or whoever, and then he's probably going to come like closer to where he was previous the jump. So that's my only thing now of like, I would rather let it seesaw back to where he was.
Yeah. The chat is saying that was Andrew Cooper, Coupe Fiasco, that I thought it might've been that name. Yeah. I also want to say on your guys' ADOT point, 3.9 ADOT weeks 1 to 9, 7.95 by my numbers weeks 10 to 18. They did all that stuff in the first half of the year. This is one of those trends that we have the primacy effect, where like this is what was happening the first half of the year, and so we lock in like that's what his profile was. They expanded what they were doing with Dalton Kincaid in the second half of the season. That was the first half of his rookie year, and then they actually did have him at like a legitimate tight end ADOT of 7.9. That's actually slightly above the average for tight ends in the second half of the season. His full season numbers show a really low ADOT. But he was good in the second half of the season. Like, he was, I think, a little bit better than the first half. So anyway, that's another note I wanted to throw out there.
That's fair. It's getting to a point like when he's like 3 or 4 picks away from Mark Andrews and like 10 picks ahead of George Kittle. I just have this thought in my back of my mind. It's just like, are we overthinking it and taking him, you know, over guys that we just know are really good and have been consistently good for, you know, 5 years? Like, it's
suspiciously
a little bit
not naming he who must not be named amongst the tight ends. Like, I ultimately, this is what it is there's Kincaid people and there's Pitts people, and there are not good people on both sides. There are no good people in this conversation. And I am a Pitts slappy. I obviously understand what I'm going into. Like, I'm going to end up hating this Zach Robinson guy as much as I hated Arthur Smith.
Hey, don't talk about my preschool buddy like that.
Yeah, it is what it is. I cannot have Kincaid because I have Pitts ranked higher, and I prefer Pitts' range of outcomes a lot.
Well, the guy you should have behind both of them is Andrews.
No, Andrews is like a lock. Andrews is, I take Andrews over McBride.
Go look at his profile last year and how it changed in a new offense. A little bit different.
So. Yes, but the wide receivers that we thought was going to be good, like, oh, they're going to play all this 11 personnel, like, no, they all suck. Beckham's gone. Bateman stinks. It's the whole plane is built out of Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews.
Sam,
but you are right, Gretch.
His ADOT came down like 2 yards from his previous career low. His targets per out run also came down with a lower ADOT. So like if you do like a weighted targets per out run way down, there's still a lot of volume there too, but it's not like that much better of a, like when Sam said, like these guys that we know are good. And I guess my argument would be, we know Mark Andrews is good, but like his usage can shift around too. He's in a new offense last year and it did change. And every season's independent, the way that I look at it. I mean, I think you have to project forward, right?
Sam, like circling back full circle on where we started, what do you think in general about the overall tight end prices, let's say from like Kelce to Kittle, like this, mid elite tier here? Do you think those are efficient? Do you think that it's a buying opportunity?
Yeah. I mean, I think overall I'm overweight on them. I think we've talked about Pitts enough. We don't have to get into that. I'm pretty in on Kittle, Andrews, McBride, Kelce, like full stop. I think Kincaid is fine, and I'm probably like want to be a little underweight Pitts. But I do agree overall, like macro, that it's a buying opportunity on these guys. And yeah, it's just like this weird thing where you never really have to reach on them because one of them's always going to be floating around. So yeah, I think it probably doesn't move. Like I don't know what's going to cause it to move up from an ADP perspective. So yeah, it feels like a pretty solid buy for me. Let's talk these rookie wide receivers. They're both up, which I can only imagine is just sort of pre-draft excitement. There's obviously no news driving Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. up. I guess good testing from Nabers.
There is probably news on Nabers, which is this continued drumbeat that some teams view Nabers as the number one wide receiver versus Marvin Harrison Jr. That's what's driving him up. The Harrison stuff is just boredom.
Yeah, it's just boredom, I think. And we'll probably see it correct a little bit post-draft, but I did want to get in the conversation of landing spots for these guys, because I think compared to the normal wide receiver, like usually the top wide receivers are going more so in the teens. These guys are both projected to be like top five, top seven picks. So we do have a little bit more certainty about their landing spots than we do with the typical rookie wide receiver. I put together, so here are all picks from pick 3 to pick 10. I think with like almost absolute certainty, none of these guys are dropping past pick 10. Obviously a trade up could happen from some team, but I think that's pretty unlikely. And I wrote this article, you can check it out on Established to Run, about the top rookie wide receiver landing spot. So I have that ranked here. I have, you know, Chargers and Cardinals being top 3 landing spots, you know, Patriots, Giants, and Jets being decent landing spots. Some spots like the Titans and Bears, I think, are quite bad. And when I look at this, it's just like, man, if these guys land where they're likely to land, Cardinals, Chargers, and Giants, like those are just, I think, even Giants, like it sounds gross, but there's just no wide receivers there that they're immediately going to project for such an insanely high target share that it's not even that bad of a landing spot, even though it sounds gross. The only thing you're like avoiding with these guys is like these landmines and the Titans and Bears, which I do think are like true landmine landing spots for their year one fantasy production. But if you don't get that, like it just looks pretty good here. So I'll stop ranting. Anybody have thoughts on landing spots for these guys and whether it's like appropriately priced in?
I mean, Giants is such a dusty spot if the offensive line is as bad as it was last year.
Yeah, I kind of disagree that they would be 10th. I think I would take the Bears landing spot over the Giants. Straight up.
For sure.
Because you get Caleb Williams. You do have a lot of target. I see where you're going from the projections angle and it being easy to project more volume in the Giants. But like the fact that you'd have a better offense and a better quarterback, and it usually leads to higher efficiency. I mean, like if they land with the Bears, they're going to be like the Tank Dell of the Chicago passing game, would be the theory, right? I mean, that doesn't guarantee that Caleb Williams is going to do what CJ Stroud did. But they're still going to be the clear number 3 in the 3-way passing game. I mean, that seems pretty solid.
Yeah. We've also seen another LSU wide receiver go to a Giants team in round 1, with perceived bad quarterback play, who had one of the best rookie wide receiver seasons of all time, earning a ton of volume and doing a lot after.
Wow, where is Bill Barnwell on the League Neighbors? I gotta figure
that out. One thing on the, I guess on the eight, I think I'm maybe closer to, I don't mind the Giants spot. And one thing I've heard said too, that does give me a little confidence, is that like Daboll's not an idiot, you know, and like he will build the offense out of Malik Neighbors if they spend this high of a pick on him. So that's kind of exciting. And like, isn't the whole thesis with Malik Neighbors and the whole reason he's even inching up into the Marvin Harrison conversation because of what he does after the catch? Like, he's just such a dynamite yak guy, which if he's getting schemed, you know, 7-8 targets a game, like near the line of scrimmage and just letting him ball out, like that sounds pretty fun to me for fantasy.
Yeah. I also push back on the Bears. Like I do feel pretty good about it being a bottom 10 landing spot. I mean, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, you have to really squint to see a world in which they're not just eating up a huge share of their team's targets. And I get that. I don't know. Like, I get it's a bit of a projections angle and we're looking towards the end of the season, but we've seen rookie wide receivers blocked by veterans. Like, that happens all the time. People wanted to ignore it last year with JSN, and now that's like the entire excuse for some people as to why he wasn't good as a rookie. We're also talking about a rookie quarterback. Like, I love Caleb Williams as a prospect, but it is really few and far between that we get the CJ Stroud rookie seasons. It's way more likely you get the Trevor Lawrence rookie season than you get the CJ Stroud rookie season, just from like a probability standpoint. So I guess like I can see the ultimate ceiling case. It works better for the Bears than it does for Giants, but I think in most outcomes, I feel pretty solidly better about the Giants.
Those are not like controversial points that you made. I guess I would just argue that it kind of depends what you're looking for, because I agree with you, especially about the rookie quarterback stuff. And I don't think we can just guarantee, especially just from a volume perspective, that Caleb Williams is going to be able to elevate multiple receivers right out of the gate. But I guess I would just say I agree with Yuri and Pete's points about the Giants too, but from 10th to 25th is probably just not a meaningful difference, right? Like, there's some spots that are very clearly hits. They have a great quarterback in place. They have target volume available. There's some spots, like I would agree with the Titans. I don't want to land with like probably not a ton of target volume, and I don't know if the quarterback's any good, you know? So it's kind of those two things. When they're both going against you, it's bad. I think, you know, for the Bears, like another point about the Bears thing is just like when you get that crowded of a room and the only thing is target volume that's holding them down, there is a case that like injuries can open things up, right? Like Keenan Allen's been banged up the last couple of years. I think it's a big reason why he's still going where he's going. I think he should be going higher, but people expect that he'll miss a few games with a hamstring. And I saw something on Twitter the other day that was like, he's one of the highest expected injury, you know, some one of those injury predicting things that said he's one of the highest expected guys to miss some time. So when you get these things, it's like, my point is a Malik Neighbors level talent. These guys are both considered to be like generational, which is definitely the definition of generational. There's two generational prospects in the same class. I think that's how that works. You put that guy even alongside, I mean, the argument is they could be as good as Keenan Allen or DJ Moore in a couple of years, potentially right away. Some guys are that good right away. And these two are, they're, as prospects talked about, as if they could be on that level.
That makes sense. Curious what you guys think. Like, I think whatever you want to call the best landing spot, whether it's the Cardinals or Chargers, I think for me, those are pretty clearly the top two.
It's definitely not the Chargers, right? Like, the Chargers are going to throw like 417 forward passes.
If they take, I'm saying, like, imagine them taking a wide receiver at number 5 overall. How is that not a clear signal that they want to
throw? That's a massive hit. You're out of your mind, Davis. It's such a big hit. We can't be that accurate on our predictions of volume. I do think you're right. That's the most likely outcome for the Chargers. But you also have a guarantee of a quarterback that can help the efficiency of the receiver. And the only target competition is Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston. Like, these guys aren't good.
And it's what, like, I understand those concerns, but like, at least when you do the Patriots thing, you have both those concerns, right? They're going to just run the ball a shit ton and you have a bad quarterback. I mean, this is Justin Herbert, and he has proven that he can feed an alpha wide receiver. I think even with Jim Harbaugh's influence, like, this guy's going to get fed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my thought too.
Whoever goes to the Chargers is going to have a good fine season. It's gonna there are going to be some
they'll get routes games. Right away, which not every rookie get gets routes right away. Which is
yeah, nice. Can't you see Harbaugh being a hardo about that though? A little bit. Can't you see Harbaugh being like, you didn't work hard enough?
Can I see Jim Harbaugh being a hardo? Yes, yes. I don't even have to squint.
But don't you think y'all hate Quinn Johnston more than whoever? I mean, the advantage is Malik Nabers shows up and is Jim Harbaugh going to be a hardo on Nabers or on Quinn Johnston? He's got to pick one of two young players.
I can see Harbaugh making QJ like his pet project of being like, I'm going to rehabilitate you, son. We are going to make you an NFL ball player. I mean, I am so Chargers phobic to the point that I don't even like clicking Justin Herbert as quarterback 14, which is like so clearly a screaming value. It's like probably the best value on the board at quarterback. And I'm just like, Do I have to backdoor Justin Herbert and Quentin Johnston on this team? It's so brutal.
When you said that, it just clicked for me that the whole thing with Quentin Johnston is how big of a game he had against Michigan, against Michigan. Jim Harbaugh.
Yes.
In the college football playoff when TCU won that shootout, Jim Harbaugh, he remembers that this dude crushed him in that game.
Yes. This is literally how he's making decisions.
Did Nabers or Harrison ever go against Michigan in college? We should look into that to see
how Harrison did, and he wasn't very good. He wasn't very good.
Mm. Okay. He's taking Nabers over Harrison then. Heard here first. let's hit on some fallers here. Rashee Rice, he continues to sort of drop like a stone in these drafts. He's now down to pick 43. This is obviously off the aggravated assault charge from his reckless speeding incident a couple weeks ago.
Harrison had 118 in a TD and 120 in a TD in his two matchups against Michigan.
Bust.
That's below his per game averages. So
against an elite defense, he had 118 in both games and a TD in both games.
I guess I just remembered Ohio State losing and assumed he did not do that good, to be honest.
Yeah. We can keep this somewhat short in our eyes. I think it's been talked about a lot, but does this aggravated assault thing worry you guys?
I'm taking him like every draft right now. Okay. He's gonna miss like two games.
I'm taking him a lot too.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is a wrong price. I mean, this gets into a whole discussion that I think is really interesting around risk. And like at the time that we make these decisions, we can't quantify what this risk is. And so they wind up going into no man's land where they're guaranteed to have either been undervalued or overvalued. But what the risk that gets brought into play here changes the opportunity cost equation, which is why the player drops. And that doesn't mean the ADP is wrong now when we have to make the decision. There's uncertainty, and we're tasked with trying to define that. If we have no issue with Rashee Rice's uncertainty, with the specifics of this case, with the fact that the Chargers didn't include anything with the guns rumors or anything with like DUI related, alcohol, substance abuse related, it was all like reckless driving and endangerment, which is still serious. But the stuff that I've seen with the specifics around this seem that like it's probably not going to be a massive response in terms of the suspension and everything. That's a guess, but there is risk. And so the shift in ADP and everything, there's the discussion around this drives me nuts because people are always like, his price is wrong. And it's like, yes, his price is going to prove to have been wrong when we have more information. It's either going to be higher or it's going to be way lower. If he gets suspended for like the whole season, he's not going to get drafted. But there's a small amount of risk in all of these off the field situations. We can't quantify it. And the opportunity cost equation does change like where we should be drafting the player.
Yeah. My thing is that I don't think the risk is going to go away anytime soon. This is going to be a prolonged thing where there's going to be uncertainty throughout the offseason. And as that happens, I think we'll get some incremental news about the legal proceedings, but it's not going to be decided. So where I am is I think this is a good price to be taking him. I don't think I'm not racing to the board and picking him every single time just because I think we're going to get this discount for a while. It's going to last for a long period of time. So if you want to take a really risk on strategy and be like, I'm taking Rice every time, I think that's fine. I just think there is this like risk, like you put it, Gretch, it's like unquantifiable right now what exactly it is. So I do understand the decrease in ADP.
Two thoughts on that too. I think the other thing is for why his ADP could get significantly cheaper than this is if this event makes them even more likely to spend their first round pick on a wide receiver. Like, yeah. I don't know what the true odds of that were before. Like, it could have been maybe closer to a coin flip. Like, if this pushes them more to that, I think similar to the Kincaid stuff with like double counting, like I think people would naturally want to push Rice back a little bit when they add a wide receiver. So if you couple that with the legal proceedings drawing out, to me, you have like two events that I think can only push his ADP down, whereas it's hard to envision anything getting cleared up with this legal wise that would cause him to move up, which does just seem we're going to have like a slow, steady push down until like there's a, someone saying like, I'm not letting him go any further than this.
I'm already doing that. And it sounds like Davis is already doing that. I had him as a first, second turn value based on his profile before any of this came up. I thought he was pretty significantly underpriced.
Yeah, add a first round wide receiver in there to take away all the dust, Sky Moore, Mecole Hardman, Justin Watson, Noah Gray targets, and you've got to like 120 targets right there, which leaves Kelsey and Rice like completely unbothered. And if my base supposition is right that the Chiefs are going to want to score more points this year, Rice is a huge, and like, I guess my vast experience has been in the past, I've played situations like this too conservatively and then have just, you know, looked at the Giga Chads who said, I don't care, I'm probably going to lose anyways. And they have a bunch of cheap Tyreek Hill or whoever.
Did you just call yourself a Giga Chad for having invented the I'm going to lose anyways?
No. I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying I've been unwilling to be a Giga Chad okay. in the past. And yeah,
yeah, right, you're a like, sophisticated right, auto drafter the past couple years, right?
Sophisticated auto drafter. And I mean, Rice of the picks after like fifth to eighth round, I mean, he offers the best asymmetric upside because the market already told you, we think this guy's worth a second round pick, but now because we think there's a chance he misses four games, he's now not. And you know,
and there's people like the in the chat, this Mr. Popinski said, didn't he flee the scene with Glocks and drugs? Like that was the rumor. That's that they, when they charged him, I actually was more comfortable taking Rashee Rice after that. And I saw him starting to slide in my slow. I happened to be right in that range of my drafts in all my slow drafts. And he was falling behind ADP and everything to one at that point because these charges came out. And then if you were watching the legal people on Twitter, they're like, yeah, we knew charges were coming. Like, this isn't a huge surprise, and it's actually vaguely good news because nothing about Glocks or, like, about guns or drugs was in the charges. The charges were all, like, reckless endangerment and stuff like that, which is still serious.
Well, but aggravated assault was one of the charges, which if you can put the odds of him actually being charged with this at, like, really low, which I think is fair, but that charge does come with minimum 2 years in prison, so... I agree with you, Gretchen.
Sorry, but it didn't have the gun thing.
No. Yeah, exactly. None of that stuff, but still that was to me a little bit of news that like, okay, there is this downside risk that exists. I think it's extremely low he gets charged with this. I'm just saying, like, I'm not a lawyer. Yeah, and we don't know. So
that's fair, quote criminal as
that's fair.
That's fair, criminal.
Like we saw it with like, I didn't think Plaxico Burress when he shot himself was actually going to go to jail for that. And he ended up going to jail for it in the middle of his NFL career.
It's crazy. I forgot.
It was
that.
Insane.
How many times have we seen this with like the wheels of justice specifically for the NFL, just moving at a molasses pace? I mean, how it's like every single example. When do one of these ever get resolved quickly? It's never.
And one more thing I'll just say about Rice's profile is if you're really concerned about Rice and not willing to take him at this ADP, because this is another team where there's a lot of targets that are going to go around. I brought in Marquise Brown, but he's probably not a huge target earner, more of a vertical kind of weapon. They might use him around the line of scrimmage, but he's never been like a massive target share guy. And there's enough for him and other people. If you're not really into Rice at this price, then I would argue that you think Travis Kelce is a screaming value. Because part of the Rice
value, yeah.
Part of the Rice upside is that Kelsey's getting so old and we're drafting him in the fourth round and he's no longer that clear guy in the intermediate range. That Rice is the dude that takes over those targets. That was why I was so excited about Rice. But if you're not in on Rice, then you should be in on Kelce for sure.
Yeah.
Kelce fell off last year, except when he was their best player by far in their playoff run. So that's
More and more people are saying this all the time.
And I think we all agree too. Like if Davis's thesis from earlier of Mahomes regressing back to the mean as far as like the passing output and all of that. Like there is room for multiple of these guys to eat.
For too, sure.
You know, like,
yeah,
it doesn't have to be like an alpha dog and then everyone else is just scraps.
Pete, I know you maybe
I gotta dip out. Yeah.
Okay, cool. If you, Davis and Gretch, have time, two more players I wanted to hit on.
Yeah.
See you guys.
Later, Pete. Later.
Thanks for joining us.
And I think Pete mentioned it, but for anyone who doesn't know, we're not doing a ship chasing on Thursday, like normal. I just wanted to
prepping for the 5-hour draft stream.
Instead. That's right. The draft stream's the next one.
Yeah. Romeo Dubs, this whole Packers wide receiver situation is an interesting one. I wanted to throw up here. So the comparison of it's either talked about as four guys. I threw Melton on here for fun because he did have a legitimate role down the stretch last year. So I added him. But these five guys, you know, range from Jaden Reed at ADP around 60 to Bo Melton, basically undrafted. Here I have sort of their yards per out run, targets per out run, fantasy points per game, and their route rate in both games played last year and in the playoffs. And I thought what was most interesting when I did this, so, you know, Packers in the playoffs, you know, they're facing the Cowboys and the 49ers. Everything's on the line. They're trying to make the NFC Championship game. And who is their clear starting wide receiver in terms of routes? It's Romeo Dubs. He's at 81%. You know, Watson was coming back from injury over the past couple weeks. He's down at 40. Reed is just at 60-ish percent over those two games. I just thought that
too. Reed was hurt too.
Was he banged up? Because he didn't miss any time.
It was a little bit of a surprise. It was a little bit of a surprise.
Legit game time decision.
I don't think so.
I think
it was a surprise that his route rate was this low, because in all of our playoff contests, I remember Leone being like, we played a decent amount of Reed and we were surprised at his route rate. Like it was something after the fact that Leone highlighted to us.
He had a rib injury. So from week.
I don't think it was a legit
game. That was earlier in the season that he was a game time decision, right? Wasn't that
from week 14 on, he goes 42%, 31%, 60%. 46%, 61% of the snaps. He suffered that rib injury that caused him to miss week 16, and he never got back to full touches after that.
Yeah, but I guess my point is, so I have the route rate in games played last year, and I realize there's some injury stuff in there as well, but it's not – his route rate in games played last year was also 60%. Like, he was very rarely a full-time player, like, all of last year. That's, you can take that in two ways, right? You can be like, that's a little bearish. Maybe there's just going to be this messy rotation next year. Or you could say, hey, he's the most efficient on a yards per out run, targets per out run basis. They're going to scale him up next year. I just think my take is, like, I think this Packers thing is going to be like a messy four and five man rotation.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like, I love the archetypal bets of the year two breakouts, but I think I lean towards like Watson, Dubs, Wicks, even Melton last round shots. Like, I don't know, man. Like the Jaden Reed thing, I think is just going to be so, so frustrating next year because they have no reason to relegate any of these other guys. Like Melton and Wicks played awesome in their limited roles last year, right? Like,
Wicks,
I don't know.
Is it's awesome. Just, Wicks yeah. was a good college player. I have, let's see here.
Yeah, he's
got 25% Wicks across 150 teams.
I think he's a really good pick. In my draft so far, I took a lot of receivers in Jaden Reed's range. I not only didn't draft him, I never even considered drafting him at that price. I'm completely in agreement here. I think the thing that Reed and Watson have going for them is they both have unique skill sets in a way that if you think about a traditional three receiver set, I do think Reed's going to be on the field for those roles. But I think you make a good point, Sam, that like that's not 100% route rate kind of guy or even necessarily 80%. He's a slot guy that comes off in some of the two tight end stuff. He's going to be a motion guy, though. He's going to get some manufactured touches around the line of scrimmage that's going to help the targets per out run and some of that. And he was efficient last year. But it is a profile to me that's like last year was more like an 80th percentile outcome. He was efficient on this role, but I don't know how the role expands. The way that you described it. And so to be drafting him at this price to me is like, it's baking in too much of last year as if that was like a median and there's more room to grow. It's kind of basically what you just said. I do think he stays in that role. And I think Watson stays in his vertical role as the most athletic of the three and the, you know, first round draft capital, all of that. So to me, I do the tricky part for me. I want to be in on the cheaper bets for the reasons you said, but I think Dubs and Wicks are in some respects competing for routes in the three receiver sets. So they're going to be rotational for, you know, to some respect. I've taken more Dubs and Wicks. I don't think I've taken Watson either because it's still a pretty decent opportunity cost. I've taken Dubs and Wicks. The other note I'll add is I think the market – I'm pretty into the Packers, but I do think the market is assuming too much around Jordan Love. He wasn't perfect all season last year. He was very good at times and was great in the playoffs. But I do think that Matt LaFleur kind of – simplified things at times. I think it was a good coaching job in Green Bay last year. I think he's not talked about enough along with like Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan and all those guys that are a part of that group of, you know, Mike McDaniel, that group of younger coaches that do a lot to help their players be more successful. But my point being, if defenses can kind of come up with some answers, I'm not convinced that Jordan Love's skill set yet is like ready to evolve to like, you know, beyond what the scheme has been able to create for him to some respects. I'm not convinced in that. I'm just not convinced. And I think people are assuming that Jordan Love's going to take a huge step forward next year. What do you guys think about that part of it? Are you at all concerned about Love?
I am 0% concerned on Love. He showed up and won a road playoff game, his first crack at it. Like he just seemed like, I'm not saying Jordan Love is the next great quarterback, like the next Rodgers or Favre, but I think he probably will settle in as like a, not stylistically, but results wise, a Kirk Cousins style quarterback where you can win a lot of regular season games, maybe win some fun playoff games, but not necessarily the guy to take you to the top of the mountain. But I have zero concerns about his ability to feed guys for fantasy, the team wanting to move on from him. Like, I think, for example, I think he's above the Purdy zone. Like, where, like, if Purdy is kind of middling this year, maybe gets injured, plays through it, whatever, and the 49ers are not on the hook for the extension, maybe they decide not to give it to him. I think he's above that. The thing I wanted to bring up, I don't know if this is – I don't know if this has gone around our space – but Dontavian Wicks has drawn comparisons to Devontae Adams from multiple of the Packers staffers. Matt LaFleur said it. The wide receiver coach said it. They said, like, you know, I mean, exactly what you know, he looks like Devontae Adams. He's got the same work ethic. He's got the same high football IQ, which is like not to say that it's right. And then I think that Dontavian Wicks is going to be, you know, the next like superstar in fantasy football. But I am kind of saying that in the sense that you could get him at wide receiver 66. And if you had to price these things out, who leads the Packers in targets? I mean, Wicks should definitely be higher. Like, I think Wicks is like got a decent chance to out target Watson this upcoming season, for example.
Yeah.
I think these numbers you have. Interesting...
Yeah. Go ahead, Greg.
I was just going to ask, these numbers include the playoff games, right? Because
Yeah, include the playoff games.
Brought his number up a lot. In the regular season, his yards per out run was like 1.3. Yeah. Wicks was much better than him in the regular season. But
you I always like giving credit for the guys for the huge playoff games, which Dubs sure. had. So, yeah, that's why these numbers might look a little different. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't – like, I think this is one of these things where, like, we talk about it. Like, sometimes in fantasy we talk about, like, there's this, like, predetermined set of outcomes that's going to happen. I think in reality this is, like, a wide receiver competition between these guys, and how they play during the season is going to determine how this shakes out. And, like, good luck trying to predict that, because I think each of these guys have a case. Even Dubs, he doesn't flash in some of the peripherals like these guys do, but – he is the one guy that kind of they trust in the X wide receiver role on this team. Reed's more of a slot guy. Even Watson, his size and speed, he's not really like a true X wide receiver. He was used a lot in sort of motions and screens and more gadgety stuff. So, yeah, man, I don't know. This is one of these things where, like, I'm kind of throwing up my hands at the talent evaluation and probably just going to be skewed towards the guys who are cheaper.
But I think, yeah, I agree with that. I think, well, two things. One, on the talent evaluation, I think you part of why I was saying that about Dobbs is he needed the playoff games to get to 1.6. 1.6 is still meaningfully lower than 1.9. They ran different amounts of route volume. It is a different conversation. But Dobbs had a 1.36 yards per out run his rookie year, and then a 1.32 in the regular season his second year. He really is banking. You have to put a lot onto what he did in the playoffs in the second season. Otherwise, you could say that he's been pretty unproductive through 2 years. Meanwhile, Dontayvion Wicks was actually a 2.0 yards per out run in the regular season. He didn't do as much in the playoff game, so he falls to 1.9 on this chart, but was really efficient in the 1 year that we saw him. I think there's a little bit of an argument that we've seen enough Dobbs to be a little bit concerned about his actual upside, particularly – I'm not trying to take out the playoff game, but particularly when you look at that rookie season not being nearly as good as Wick's rookie season. But the second thing I would say is, to your point, I think there is going to be some rotation. I think there's going to be some uncertainty. I do think Dobbs is still going to play. And if you guys like Love, these are great prices, because I think when the guys do play, there's going to be spike weeks. And this is a place in the draft, especially where Wicks is going, where it's hard to get receivers that I feel have 20-point like spike week potential. But for Dobbs too, that's why I've taken both of them. It's like, if I need a wide receiver 5 or a wide receiver 6 in a draft where I, you know, maybe I'm not super, super heavy at wide receiver early, these are guys that a passing game that was really efficient last year. If it stays efficient, I don't feel like Melton's going to be super involved, or the additional guys are going to be super involved. The tight ends weren't necessarily great on a per out basis. I do kind of think it's these first four guys that are going to have most of the production for Jordan Love. It's going to be maddening to figure out who the guy is, but on the cheaper end, they're going to profile as, you know, they're going to be worth those picks, basically, right? They're going to profile as having enough spike weeks. They're not going to be consistent, but enough spike weeks to be worth that. I like to Davis's point about having as much Wicks as he has. I think that's really sharp at this stage.
On the rotational thing, my only slight pushback on this, you know, Melton, I think it's going to be these top four guys, is like, here's the frustrating thing with the Packers last year is when Christian Watson was out with injury, or when one of these guys was out with injury, you didn't always see the huge spike in routes for Reed or Dobbs or the other guys. They would bring in Malik Heath for 30, you know, percent routes a game. They'd bring in Samori Toure for 30% routes a game. So I do think there is some philosophical thing with LaFleur here little bit.
The Eagles guy that Corain hated was committed to the bit.
So last year they went into the season with 11. I remember this was true even going into the training camp when they had 11 receivers on the roster. Every single receiver on the roster was from the 2022 or 2023 draft class, a first year or second year player.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That can explain some of that, right? Like, they didn't necessarily want to lean on these guys more than they had to. I think that's part of why you can point at Dobbs being the one, you know, in the playoff that got the heavy route rate. Is like, they needed consistency that they maybe didn't think they had from the rookies. Watson wasn't fully healthy, but he was this elder statesman in this passing game, Romeo Dobbs, by that point. I think that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be like that going forward. Maybe it will to an extent in 2024. Predict in 2025 and beyond, they'll have their guys. They're trying to figure out who those guys are. That's kind of been their team building.
Yeah. I agree. I think they just they kind of hit on Bo Melton. It's a little bit of a bit to put his yards per hour and targets per hour on here, because it was
on a bunch of guys. They hit on two tight ends. They're the youngest team in the NFL. All these dudes we just talked about, including their quarterback, are 24 and under. They can kind of just figure it out. I'm making a talent-based bet on Wicks. I think Wicks is pretty good, is really what I'm saying.
The chat loves our our pacing right now.
Yeah, we've gotten through, 6 players?
Todd will be back from paternity leave by the time this stream ends.
We got one player left and we're an hour and 10 in. This might be a record for shortest ADP chasing show. So nice. we'll hit on Amari Cooper here. Then I got to get out of here. He's down 3 spots. I don't have a ton to say here besides I think this is boredom too. We talked about boredom driving Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers up. Amari Cooper, he gets 15 PPR points every single season of his career. Mixes in a couple big spike weeks every season. He's boring, but I feel like he's consistently just a win at ADP. I don't know. Maybe not a win, but he's someone like I don't have a hot take on, but I don't see any reason to like fade him. He showed no signs of decline past couple years.
He had the best season of his career. He had the best yards per out run of his career last year. He was incredible. His best targets per out run of his career. Very efficient. It wasn't just that he didn't have signs of decline. I mean, he was the best weighted targets per out run in my database here as well, because he had a high ADOT, 14.1 ADOT. It was the highest ADOT of his career, earning volume at a higher depth, also one of his highest efficiency seasons. He was really strong last year in all the peripherals. Part of that's because his one blow-up game was so massive. But
Maybe it's the downside that like all these big games were with Joe Flacco and not Deshaun Watson.
I think that's my concern.
So it is, because you look at their backup quarter situation, it's not great. And I take it back. It is great, because Deshaun Watson did a press conference yesterday and basically intimated he has no idea when he will be healthy enough to play football again. Like, he does it like he's not throwing, he's not doing anything. I mean, we're 6 months away from the start of the season, so like,
oh my god,
but
is he gonna just retire?
Deshaun, well, god,
no, he can't retire because they need to give this money up, so he has to just be on the IR, I guess.
He's just gonna play like 8 games a season for the next 3 years and then retire.
He has no interest in playing football anymore. I mean,
I think he's done. He doesn't like being in the.
He's ever since checked out.
Turned against him. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I'm not. This is not like a pat on the back, but I think a lot of people were assuming he would come back from his whole thing and be totally fine. And I remember at the time comparing it to Tiger Woods. I was like, this is not something we should compare to other football players. It's such a different thing to go from everybody loves me to now everybody hates you. Remember when Tiger Woods came back and everyone on the was booing him after every shot, as opposed to like yelling in his favor after every shot. And that quickly went back to people being on Tiger's side. But for a stretch, the whole like course when he was out golfing was against him. And that's what Deshaun Watson's gotten. Like, nobody – he used to be everybody's – like, you think about, like, the staff and the training room and everything. I'm sure he was everybody's favorite guy. He walked in, you know, everybody's, like, saying hi to him when he's walking through the tunnel and everything. The fans are absolutely loving him. And now it's like nobody – probably, I would assume, all through the different things that he does, and including getting booed in games and stuff, that he has a completely different relationship with playing football now. I'm not trying to make him into a sympathetic figure, but I wouldn't surprise me if he just doesn't want to play football anymore, you know?
Yeah. Here's what I'm doing if I'm the Browns. This is very unlikely to happen because of how NFL owners think. But if Deshaun sucks again this year, I'm doing the Russell Wilson thing. I'm cutting him. I'm eating the $150 million in dead. People talk about dead cap a lot, but what it really is sunk cost fallacy. Like, Deshaun Watson, he might have all that dead cap. He's not getting better if he sucks again. If he sucks again, take the big dead cap hit, have a complete rebuilding year, and then
the problem is they all get fired. They all
get
fired.
That's the issue. Everyone gets fired.
That's the problem. But I don't know. Like, if I'm
that's probably the right decision, but they won't.
I think Stefanski is a really good coach. He got them to the playoffs with, you know, Joe Flacco and the corpse of Deshaun Watson. So,
this is not what is going to happen,
but that's what I'm doing. I'm keeping Stefanski, cutting Watson, getting the dead cap, start this thing over. That's what I'd do.
Off the top of your head, what do you think the Browns' record was in games Watson started last year?
They were like weirdly good.
They were 5-1. So you're not cutting a 10-win quarterback. It's just not going to happen.
But the thing is, I'm saying like, if the defense regresses, like the defense was playing so well for those games. That's the thing.
We all know that. Yeah.
It could get real ugly if the defense regresses.
That was like a 5-1 where every week it was like, well, they're winning in spite of their quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he played like absolute ass. I mean, his
yeah, they beat the Ravens, right? That game where he got hurt, I think. Yeah.
And then against the Colts, he went one for five with an interception, and they won 39-38. I don't remember this game, but he didn't play quarterback.
That's the one he got hurt, I think.
Okay, PJ Walker came in and led him to a 1-point victory over the Colts in a high school affair. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't take Amari Cooper, is because I'm not stacking him, and I want to stack him. I just want to leave stacking partners open. And so if I take Jaden Reed right there, if I take Terry McLaurin right there, I've got a stacking partner. If I take Amari Cooper, I don't have – I'm just not taking Deshaun Watson.
This is crazy. I got a stat for you guys. If he left that Baltimore game too, then he won five games. He left two of them, and the other three, the opponent scored 3 points or less.
That's just, it's really so incredible ridiculous stuff. Yeah.
Man. I went to the Rams game in person. The Rams-Browns game. This was the first Joe Flacco game in person. And I went with my girlfriend and her parents. And I was trying to explain to them Joe Flacco. I was like, he hasn't really been in the league for 3 years. Like, he just came off this couch for this game. Like, they're like, is he going to be good? I'm like, no, he's going to be terrible. Just instantly, he's just hucking the ball downfield, just like making the offense look so good. I think he threw for like 300 yards in that game. They lost. But to me, that was just such a big thing of like, you take Deshaun Watson out and put any competent quarterback in, and this offense is like immediately fun. It just showed to me, like, even though their record was good with Watson, he was dragging them down big
time. The Watson thing, or the Flacco thing, is so interesting because it just showed that to be a quarterback successful in the NFL right now, all you need to do is not take sacks and throw the ball deep. And everyone is too coward to throw the ball deep. No team will do it. And Flacco's like, I've been doing this since I was 10 years old, bro. I'm 47. I'm just going to throw the ball high and like, yeah, go make a play.
Yeah, the Flacco thing last year was just ridiculous. But anyways, that's all I have for ADP chasing today. The final pre-draft ADP chasing, it'll be super interesting in about 10 days now. Or is it, I guess it's, yeah, 8 days before the NFL draft. We'll get a ton of new information on these guys, landing spots and everything. So, yeah, anything you guys want to plug over the next week besides the ship chasing draft stream, which will be starting on Thursday, I think, around the draft time?
No.
Gratch, you got anything?
I'm about to go do a show with Bime 4.
No, just the draft stream's a big one. Jeez. One thing in the back of my mind was that earlier we moved on from the Kincaid thing and the chat was asking me about my Andrews thing. I just wanted to add a little note that I wasn't trying to say that I would take Kincaid way ahead of Andrews. I was more saying that the fact that their ADPs are close is kind of like partially Andrews, maybe profile being a little bit weaker as well. So I just wanted to throw that note because a couple people seemed a little confused by the way I framed that.
Gotcha. Cool, guys. Well, we'll be back ADP chasing sometime post-draft. And besides that, everybody enjoy your Wednesday. Peace out.
Sam left and left us on live, and Pete was the one running it, and I don't think I can end the live show. We got to get Pete in here.